welcome back to another episode of The Dish with Tish. How are you, my dishers? How we do it? How we hold it up? I missed you guys last week. I took the week off for Juneteenth and I did some frolicking. Do you ever just frolic sometimes? It feels good to just communicate with your loved ones and plug into them, pour into them, to just have a good time. I got a massage. I went to a show of one of my favorite artists, Andrew McMahon, Jack's Mannequin. I mean, I have a tattoo for him. I love him so much. If you do not know Andrew, you are missing out because he is a healer through his music. I love him so much. So I just needed to take a little time to rest because I have to remind myself that being someone who is a Jane of all trades, you know, rest is an essential part to being a creative, because in order to create, you have to let your body rest and know when to take some time to just recoup, recalibrate. And that's what I did. And honestly, I'm so grateful that I did, because this week has been crazy with the pop culture, truly. So I hope you guys are doing good. And if not, you're about to be, because you're here with me and we're just going to get into it, because there's truly so much to talk about. And first thing, we are lowering the Hermes flag at half mast when we see the white YSL scarf flying over headquarters. That's when we know a new editor-in-chief has been chosen. And I need to know, when does this conclave start, okay? Because I'm sure you've heard that Miss Anna Wintour is stepping down from her role as editor-in-chief at Vogue magazine. Hence my, if you're only listening, I've got my fuck-ass bob on, okay? In honor of our fallen Anna Wintour. It's giving Anna Wintour in Edna mode. I love this bob so much. So I had to pull it out for Miss Anna. And I mean, honestly, this is not something I saw happening this year. I mean, what? I literally had to pick my jaw up off the floor when I saw that news break this morning. I'm not a fan of all of her choices, but I mean, Anna has really had to shift through the changing tides. You know, the fact that she became editor in chief at 38 years old is a feat in itself, on top of the historic tenure she had for almost 40 years. She's been at Vogue since 1988, which is so gaggy and impressive in itself. And, you know, she's been engaged in a power struggle with the heads of Condé Nast and her counterpart at UK Vogue, British Vogue. And, you know, she's still going to be working at Condé Nast, though. So I don't think it could have ended that poorly, despite what a lot of rumblings online are saying. I believe she's still going to be the global chief content officer and global editorial director at Vogue. And her counterpart that she struggled with was Edward Enifil, who is the editor-in-chief of British Vogue, and he stepped down 2 years ago. So at the time, you know, she won the battle, but not the war. And I think he was given a job almost as a placeholder until she stepped down. And I believe he's a fave to take over. And I love him. You know, I'm rooting for him, A, because he's Black, and B, he would be the first openly gay editor-in-chief at Vogue. And I just think that he has a lot more color, obviously. I mean, one thing about us, the culture, we're going to bring it. And I think that he values models in a way, you know, giving them more opportunities than celebrities and influencers. Like, there was nothing like having the Naomis, the Claudias, the Kates, the Linda Evangelistas, like the supermodel. And I feel possibly whoever takes over and Edward specifically would lean more towards that direction. So we'll see. And it's also crazy because the Devil Wears Prada 2 is officially a thing. So it's just crazy. I really thought they were going to have to drag her dead body out of Vogue, truly. But I mean, she's 75. She's been there for a long time, and she can leave with her head held high that she did that for a long time. She changed the fashion game, truly. I mean, it's kind of crazy that fuck ass bops are such a trend and Anna is leaving. Like, this is her time. This is her moment, Anna. Come on. But she's leaving. She's gone. So we'll see. This is the conclave that I'm here for. I want to know who is going to take over. I will be waiting with bated breath. And another thing that left me gagged, Paris, y'all are so lucky because not only did you get Beyonce, you also got Miley on stage with Beyonce. And the fact that you even got Miley, I mean, Miley doesn't even tour. She's not doing that really anymore. Oh my gosh. I honestly like high key hate them. I'm seeing Cowboy Carter again next week for 4th of July in DC. And I'm like, okay, babe, let's not forget where you're from. I mean, I'm sure Houston feels like that extra because it's like, let's not forget your birthplace. You better show out for us too. And I'm hoping that DC 4th of July Bay gets a banger of a show like Paris did. Like, that's so crazy. I'm honestly just so jealous that they got that. And they got Jay-Z. Jay-Z came out too. Man, like to witness that in person, like truly, I wouldn't know what to do with myself, honestly. And I'm just praying that we get a moment like that. Y'all are so lucky. But we gotta move on to some people who are not so lucky right now. Miss Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom. Oof. It's been a tough year for Katy, guys. I mean, the music, the Blue Origin of it all. And apparently, the space trip was the catalyst to their demise in the relationship. And I mean, the Blue Origin fight is probably the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen anybody do in my life. And I mean, her with the flower up there and the butterfly and coming back and kissing the ground, acting like she's been on Mars for 20 years. I'm like, babe, this was a vanity trip. Let's be real. And high key, this is the first time that I don't blame the man for divorcing the woman because I couldn't look at her the same after that. Apparently, Orlando is in Venice for the Lauren Sanchez, Jeff Bezos wedding in Venice. And Katie can't go, but he's still going. And the reason that this is relevant, because I don't even really want to talk about this wedding, but I'm going to give my two cents about it, okay? But the reason that it's relevant is because a few days ago, this absolutely absurd source quote came from Page Six. I'm going to read it to you guys that said, Orlando Bloom reportedly blasted Katy Perry's Blue Origin space in April, saying, quote, embarrassing, cringeworthy, in the middle of a fight. Orlando told her the whole thing looked ridiculous during an explosive argument. It hurt her feelings, the insider noted. Of course she was hurt. Imagine you're going to space, motherfucking space, and your partner is unimpressed. However, Perry is difficult to accept that her partner will be attending Lauren Sanchez and Jeff Bezos's Italian wedding this month without her as she tours. He complains about her going to space and then wants to go to the wedding of the people who made it possible for her to do this in the first place, the outlet added. They're already fighting, and now the wedding is another thing they have to fight about. They're really her friends more than his, and he's the one going to the wedding. And this allegedly annoyed her because he's not particularly close to either of them. So everyone's in Venice right now for this wedding, and apparently they tried to rent out the entire town of Venice, which is giving Lex Luthor behavior, and the locals of Venice have been protesting and making it really difficult for the entire wedding party. And it's like, you can rent an entire town, but you can't pay more taxes and give all your employees livable wages and benefits. Like, okay. And I just, it's not even about them getting married. Like, that's not the issue. The issue is that they're acting like it's a show of wealth that is the problem. Like, you cannot buy an entire city or town for your wedding, blocking the canals where people work and make their money, like their livelihood, you know? And they've been protesting, and this is a city of people living their lives. This isn't like your sandbox, your private little island toy that you can just fuck around with. And honestly, these people making the wedding more difficult, like these locals, it's karma. And I appreciate the people protesting. And meanwhile, his wife is using her divorce money for good and doing a lot of really cool shit with it. So clock that. But back to Katie. You know, I think that touring is so hard on relationships. On top of a flop, two flops, because not only did her album flop, but then the Blue Origin was a flop. And then touring on top of that, you know, it's not like it's a Vegas residency, which she did. She's done it twice. That makes it a lot easier because you're going to the same place every night. And I think a tour is just hard on a relationship. And her last relationship ended while she was on tour. Honestly, I feel like truly being an aging female pop star, I fear that that's one of the toughest places to be. And I think it's a terrible place to be in the entertainment industry, maybe even the worst, you know, because now you can be an aging actress for the most part, you know, like not really, but there's more of an opportunity for an aging actress. But when you're the girl that's on stage who's dancing with poop coming out of a toilet in Vegas, that was like her whole shtick. It's like, you know, it's coming off cheap. I feel like there's Peter Pan syndrome for men who don't want to grow up. And for women, it's almost like the Tinkerbell syndrome, which is, you know, they die if they don't get applause and they can't. It's the Sunset Boulevard. Like, I'm ready for my close up, Mr. Jamil. You know, like she could have just said, hey, I had a good run. I'm Katy Perry. I was that girl. I did Teenage Dream. I Kissed a Girl, California Girls. You know, Hot and Cold, like all of this shit, you know, like she could have said, hey, I did my big one. I lived my life. I had an amazing career. I maybe make a greatest hits, do something once in a while. But, you know, she decided to go the other route and not let go. And she's doing some stuff that's wacky as hell. And I feel bad for her. That she is kind of losing everything right now. This is not a good year for Katie. I can't believe her and Orlando are done so. And I hope for their daughter's sake, you know, they have a kid, so hopefully they can be as amicable as possible. Or maybe she got to go to space again to find her peace and stay up there for a little longer. But another couple that has been in the news constantly lately, Hailey and Justin Bieber. Ooh. I know I've talked about Justin a lot recently because he's been going through it clearly, but reportedly they're struggling to keep their marriage together and rumors continue to swirl over the status of their relationship. And it's been reported that Justin has been irritated by the way she displays their relationship. He feels like it's superficial in public. And meanwhile, the lack of motivation has been upsetting Haley. So speculation has been that they're headed towards divorce, has intensified, especially because she was seen while she was in Soho in New York without her wedding ring, and that caused a whole upset last week. So she put it back on. So maybe she just wanted to show off her manicure. Her nails was cute, you know? And so he's getting irritated with Haley, which I thought was kind of funny because he posted on his story and said, you know, bitch, if you're giving me the silent treatment, at least tell me why. And I was like, oh my God. Like, wait, he's not in New York. Like, what's going on? Is he? She was probably like, you know, the Euphoria is this fucking play about us. Like, it's this story about me, like, not you subtweeting, putting me on blast. And, you know, I've said this before. I think that the Diddy stuff brought out some trauma and some darkness in general. And it brought up so much for Justin being a dad. And, you know, he was so young when he started. And, you know, he was sober for a while and he got really into church and he was in Hillsong for a while. And we know how that turned out. If you don't know about the Hillsong, I might actually even do like a little deep dive reprieve into that because that really is crazy. And it feel like that's also like the timing is suspicious of all this stuff is coming up for him, you know, and I've seen so many videos of him lately. Like, he's been very active on social media, and, you know, he's not well. And I've said that before. Some people are like, he's being silly. And I'm like, he just changed his Instagram handle to Lil Bieber. So clearly, this man is not okay. But who knows how that is transferring into their relationship, you know? But there is something that I want to point out with Justin being irritated with Haley about the superficialness of their relationship, you know, about how she feels, how they look and are portrayed and perceived in the public eye. And my response to that is if that's true and he does feel frustrated, I mean, I am with her. Like, I'm annoyed at it because if you think about it, he has not had to deal with any kind of fallout or flack of their relationship since day one. She's the one that's gotten the brunt of everything. I mean, the level of public bashing and scrutiny that she faced in the beginning of their relationship, and even to this day, for being in the role of like the girl that landed Justin Bieber. And I kind of understand why she is not wanting to give anyone any more of a reason to dig further into their personal life and into their relationship. You know, like, if she got a lot of black friends too, and I'm sure she's like, let's do this in the house. I'm not trying to do this publicly. And I don't blame her for that, honestly. Like, I understand, like, it's easier said than done to not care about what people think about you. But especially when you're on her level and you're someone who has been criticized from the moment you started being serious with this man, like him standing on business, like objectively talking, like taking digs at her on Father's Day. And I'm like, you're making a joke in front of everybody and it's coming off like you hate your fucking wife. And to me, it's almost like reminiscent of Kim and Kanye, like early in the separation days when Kim was just kind of like walking around, like pretending like nothing was wrong and nothing was happening. Meanwhile, Kanye was like spiraling. And I think it's going to be the same thing and it might come to a head. I feel like there's so much with Justin that we don't know. You know, I think the biggest thing behind Hollywood scenes is these fucking money managers. Like, bro, they are fucking Joanne the scammer, honey. God, I miss her. Y'all remember Joanne the scammer? But for real, these money managers, like, oh my gosh, they are really the best kept scamming secret. Like, there was Harvey Weinstein, and then there's these money managers. So allegedly in that falling out between Scooter Braun and Justin, it really happened around the fact that Scooter had done all these deals for Justin, alleging that allegedly, but instead of him getting paid, like, here's the check, sign here, he got Justin like stock options in these different companies and whatever that big one is, that company that Scooter owns. And instead of getting paid, Scooter said, I'm gonna take stock. I'm gonna put your money, I'm gonna invest your money. But then he took the stock, and then the stock was put in the name of like Scooter's equity company. And I think it got to the point when they broke up that Justin looked at his bank account and he was like, hey, like, where's the money at? And it was all tied up in this web, allegedly, of things that Scooter put it in, and he didn't actually have any cash money to like pay for things, allegedly. Between the Diddy stuff and the Scooter stuff, I mean, that was a very bad breakup. And you know, when you're a child and you've had a manager for so long, I mean, if you think about like a J-Lo and Benny Medina, that's been her manager for 25 plus years, like someone who's in your life, like that's your father figure, that's your business manager, that's your manager, that's your person, your lobster. So for them to break up, I think that he's kind of like on the deep end. He's lost it a little bit. And I think the money issues as well, like, because allegedly he went to go audit Scooter to say, hey, I'm owed all this money. And the audit came back and they said, no, actually, Justin, you owe us all this money. And we never commissioned on it. So it's a big financial disaster on top of that. And we know that money issues contribute so much stress in your life. And when you're young and nothing is ever free, and you're paying for your parents' livelihood, so you can't really talk to them about it because you're paying their bills too. So that's a whole like mind fuckery. And you know, I don't know what's been going on there. And you know, the other day people were saying like they don't have a prenup, but I mean, even outside of the prenup, to me, at the base, it's the way a man opens the car door for you, and the way he opens a door into a place for you, or walks you into a restaurant. And you know, Justin getting that fame at such a young age. And you know, I feel like, talk about Peter Pan, I think he's kind of stuck in that age somehow. And maybe he doesn't really know how to treat her kindly from what we've seen for a while. Like, he be embarrassing her a little bit. I don't know. I just think that maybe he's kind of stuck. But at the same time, for Haley, it's like you can't expect him to change when you married him in his 20s. Like, he's not going to really switch it up like that. And you know, you see someone like a Travis Kelce who is opening up every door for Miss Taylor. Okay. And that dynamic, you know, we've seen it's yin and yang, day and night. I know Travis is still auditioning for the role of husband, but still, just the way that he dotes on her in the little things that we see, you can tell like this is someone who respects her and appreciates her and knows her worth. And I don't know if Justin is giving that for Haley. In my opinion, just from what we've seen, it doesn't look good. Like, I feel like if that was one of my girlfriends, I'd say, girl, what is that? Because that, you got to get out of there, sis. Now you're the billionaire. Okay. I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. Okay. So I brought up Taylor. So we need to talk about the Lively, Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni, Taylor Swift of it all situation. So in Variety, they said that Justin, we've talked about this about the text messages before, but Justin's lawyers can obtain the text between Blake and Taylor that pertain to It Ends With Us. And if you guys remember, I've talked about Blake had asked the judge to prevent Justin from obtaining these messages, saying that he was only dragging Taylor in as a part of a PR strategy. And in this order last week, the judge found that the messages may be relevant to the case. And we found out that the judge put in a protective order to prevent them from leaking the text messages. So the text will be shown to the jury. They will be protected from the public and they will not be released. And if you guys remember, I know I've talked about Justin's team subpoenaing her, and ultimately, Justin's legal team, they ended up withdrawing that subpoena. So after Blake's team essentially tried to shut the whole thing down once and for all, saying that Taylor in general isn't relevant to the case. And this is the most recent update that the judge wasn't persuaded by that. It says that even though Lively has represented Swift, the Swift complaint discussion about the working environment on the film, among other issues, requests for messages regarding the film and this action are reasonably to discover information that would prove or disprove harassment or retaliation. Which makes sense, because of course, like, if that's your best friend, you're going to confide in them about what's going on that set and how this person is allegedly harassing you. And man, you know, I want to see those texts so damn badly. So bad, but I do think it's the right decision for them to be blocked from public release. And, you know, I know I've said this time and time again, but you know, Taylor's just like, how did I get out? How did I get involved in this? And I think there's a multitude of reasons why she's involved in this. I mean, she's involved not just about her being in the knowledge of certain things that Blake may have confided to her and a friend, you know, like that could be important to the case, but there was a chance that she was going to be fully subpoenaed until they dropped it. And it does kind of go back to Blake putting such an emphasis on Taylor's level of creative, not only approval, but involvement in the thing, the way that Taylor was brought into the conversation and the context of the movie is that it's not like Blake was saying, you know, Taylor's like my best friend. She's such a good friend of mine. She's so incredibly talented. And when it comes to creative decisions, she could really be useful for us as we talk about certain music placements in the movie or maybe costumes. You know, she has such a good eye for anything involving media that her opinions could really be helpful and valuable to us as a team, but that's not the way that it was presented. You know, she called her a damn dragon, whether that was derogatory or complimentary, she still called her a fucking dragon. And so I think that had been brought into the conversation and it wouldn't have been such a big deal, but when you read the correspondence, that's not how you speak about your friends. And there's been such a back and forth, and it has been covered so extensively. And especially at the beginning of this, it was just articles literally daily. And I know there's been fatigue around the situation. And I would definitely say people are slightly desensitized to the Taylor Swift of it all. But when it's something like this comes out, or when you really like think about it, it's like, this is fucking crazy. Like, this was seemingly a friendship ending issue for the two of them. And more so than that, you're telling me that Taylor Swift, possibly one of the most famous people in the world, who's so curated, so intentional about not being involved in mess and being so heavily involved and mentioned in one of the messiest celebrity legal battles we've seen in a very long time. And I mean, it's just fucking crazy. And I personally am not desensitized to it. Like, every time I hear her name brought up, I am just floored at where we are because I just cannot get over it, you know? And it wasn't just about Taylor's name being brought up. Like, there was an incident where Justin came over to Blake's apartment to discuss things about the movie, and Taylor was there. And Taylor didn't know that she was meant to be there for that purpose, and it felt like she was potentially being used to intimidate Justin Baldoni. And I don't know if that's 100% what Blake's intention was, but that's the narrative that has been told. And even just seeing the actions of the things that happened, like she used her husband and Taylor to intimidate him. And that's like two separate things going on because there's Taylor's opinion, and Taylor may not desire to be involved in a friendship with Blake anymore. And that has nothing to do with the actual case. Like, I don't think you can take Taylor and Blake having a fallout of their friendship to mean that Blake's versions of events aren't true. But I just think that throughout all of this, what happened potentially is that Taylor felt like she was being used. And it sounds like she was. When you have someone who is one of your best friends, you're the godparent to their children, that's the last person you would ever expect to be using you in any sort of way. So I feel for her in that way. And this is just, oh my God, it's non-stop, you guys. So we'll see what else. I'm sure there will be more that happens very soon. And speaking of another court case, we are going to talk about the Diddy trial for a little bit because the prosecution approached their closing arguments by laying out everything associated with the RICO charges and painting him as the leader of this criminal enterprise involving foot soldiers and people who played an important role in the criminal scheme. Trigger warning for anyone. While we're talking about the Diddy stuff, we're going to get into it. Trigger warning here. And I've got the first couple pages of the actual closing argument. Over the last several weeks, you've learned a lot about Sean Combs. He's the leader of a criminal enterprise. He doesn't take no for an answer. And now you know about many crimes the defendant committed with members of his enterprise: kidnapping one of the defendant's employees, arson by trying to blow up a car, forced labor, including of an employee the defendant repeatedly sexually assaulted, bribery of a security officer to keep damning evidence against the defendant buried, and of course, the brutal crimes at the heart of this case, sex trafficking. You heard all about the defendant again and again, forced, threatened, and manipulated Cassie and Jane into having sex with escorts for his own entertainment. Across all these crimes, the same thing was true. The defendant used power, violence, and fear to get what he wanted. Dozens of witnesses agreed he doesn't take no for an answer. So the prosecution also claimed that Diddy committed bribery when he arranged for a $100,000 payment to be made to the hotel security guard, which we talked about when the trial began, to prevent that CCTV footage of him beating Cassie in 2026 from leaking to the public. And then the prosecution also recalled testimony from his former assistant detailing Diddy's plan to kill Kid Cudi, his real name, Scott Mezzacuddy, after a romantic connection between Cudi and Cassie in 2011. And according to Cassie's testimony, Diddy showed up to her apartment with a gun and told her, "Get dressed, we're going to kill Cudi." And Diddy threatened Cudi and then allegedly broke into his home. And in January 2012, Cudi's Porsche 911 convertible was firebombed with the Molotov cocktail, which the prosecution claims was also Diddy's doing. And the jury was presented with text messages from an ex-girlfriend that Diddy dated from 2021 to 2024, with whom he was accused of sex trafficking. And one message read, "One night of fun turned into the entirety of our relationship," she wrote. "And now it's all I'm expected to do and get called for. It's hurting me because I'm so much more than being loved in the dark hotel rooms, doing things that make me feel disgusted with myself." Oh, yeah, that's brutal. The defense's arguments will be on Friday, and the jury will get the case Monday. We'll see whether they can have a ruling by 4th of July holiday weekend. I know there was some turmoil with the trial this week because a lot of people seem to misunderstand the verbiage that was used in the court. And I kind of blame the prosecutor, actually, because the way that they wrote their letter about the charges, they said, "We are not pursuing the theories of liability of attempted kidnapping under New York and California law, attempted arson in California law," and that they, in New York, kidnapping, of course, and aiding and abetting sex trafficking. So this is not dropping the charges, but the government should have explained it to people, or they should have written a better letter. I don't know. I mean, we're gonna see what happens. I feel like they did a good job of showing his character and proving the point of what they were trying to do with these RICO charges. And I mean, worst case scenario, if he's somehow acquitted and he's not gonna be able to find, I mean, he's not gonna be able to find a new far right fan base like other canceled celebrities have, simply, I mean, because the accusations include gay stuff, you know, like Kanye recently lost a lot more of his far right fans when he released that fucking crazy song talking about sexual stuff with his male cousin. And after that, I mean, more than any comment he ever made about supporting Hitler. So that's how those people think, you know? And I'm sure Diddy would continue to work on little projects, and I'm sure he'd probably be ordered to work if he is successfully acquitted, because he's being sued for hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, he's got over 80 civil suits pending. Yes, I said over 80 civil lawsuits pending on his ass. So even if he is convicted, there will probably be 100 more if he's not convicted, you know? So people are just afraid to speak up right now. You know, like Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, they didn't even have 80 cases. So I feel like this is just the beginning for him, even if he is somehow acquitted. But we will see. I can't believe it's come and gone already, and we're already at closing arguments. It's been so intense and heavy, you know, like this trial. It's really crazy to see someone you grow up with be such a vile person. And it doesn't even surprise me. The more you look into it, the more it's like the writing's on the wall. Like, this man has been, I'm sure he's been a part of many murders, many attempted hits, you know. I think some with Jamie Foxx, allegedly his ex Kim Porter, allegedly. I feel like he's been a part of even Biggie. I still feel that. I still feel like Biggie was about to leave and outgrow him, and he cut that before it could go anywhere. So I really think this is a bunch of bad, horrible things that he's been doing that led to this point, and he thought he was untouchable. But karma, she keep receipts, period. She gonna get you one way or another. Oh, so that's some of the pop culture tea that has been happening, approved by God, as Sabrina Carpenter would say. That was crazy. She's so funny for that, for doing a new picture and then saying this one was approved by God. I'm like, bitch, you're missing the point. That's not what we're saying, my girl. But it's a bop, so go off, I guess. Just like, be more responsible. That's all we're asking. Just asking for a little more like thought, you know, like just a little more like critical thinking when it comes to things when you're a public person. But I wave my flag. I wave it. Oh my gosh. But we haven't had our meals yet, so I'm gonna get into my meals of the week. There's been so much also what I've been watching. I mean, Love Island is a full-time job. If you haven't listened to the episode this week of the Dish with Tish Love Island edition, I highly recommend you do because Megan and I really popped the fuck off with this one and made some really good points and just realizing stuff in real time when you're recording. It's like, oh my gosh, wow. And it's just clicked as to why there's been such a disconnect with this season. So highly recommend. But yeah, Love Island's a full-time job. Honorable mention to America's Sweethearts, the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders show. It's so good. I'm obsessed with it. I'm so connected. I really have like a parasocial relationship with some of them because they, the artistry and the talent and the passion and the drive, determination that these women have, it's unbelievable. And the fact that they're getting paid like $15 an hour, it's fucking crazy to me for everything that they do. I'm so glad they recently had a pay raise because of the work that the girls did this season. And, you know, they said, we just want to leave this better than when we came in. And that's all anyone wants to do with any kind of legacy. You just want to make it better for the people after you. And it's just such a good show. America's Sweethearts, it's on Netflix. If you haven't watched it, it was truly so good. But my appetizer this week is The Gilded Age. Oh, I am absolutely obsessed with The Gilded Age. It is such a brilliant show. It's by Julian Fellowes, who is the writer and creator of Downton Abbey, which I was also completely obsessed with. It is basically Downton Abbey, but in America during that time, during the Gilded Age. And it is, I mean, it's so rich, obviously, in the place that they are in New York in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and the sets, the costumes are just divine. I just am, and I'm hard like every time I watch it because it's just such a beautiful show. Like the artistry, I couldn't imagine being a costume designer on that show or a set designer. That would be a dream come true to work on a show like that because it's talk about determination and passion that they put into just building the world in itself. Like aesthetically, it's incredible. But then on top of it, the acting, I mean, the acting, we've got Christine Baranski, who is my girl forever. That's someone I'm following Christine into the ends of the earth, to the depths of hell. Wherever Christine go, I'ma go. Okay, whether it's Whoville with the Grinch, Greece with Mamma Mia, Chicago for The Good Fight, The Good Wife. That's my girl. I love Christine Baranski. Oh my gosh. And she's had this little thing with King Princess lately. I've been living for that. They were kind of flirting for a while, and I don't think I could have handled that. The thought of Christine Baranski being a little gay. I mean, she probably is. I mean, she's been in Broadway theater, this industry for a long time. I could see her kissing a girl and liking it like Miss Katy Perry, but she's one of the leads. We've got Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City, Miranda, and it's a completely different role than anything I've seen her in. Like this character is so kind and warm and sweet and just like the purest of hearts. I love her character. And Audra McDonald's is incredible, but if you watch White Lotus this season, then you know about my girl, Miss Carrie fucking Coon. Mama. Carrie Coon is her character, Bertha, Miss Bertha Russell, is goals. That's the kind of woman I'm trying to be, okay? Because she takes, talk about not taking no for an answer, but in a positive way. Like taking it as fuel to become better for yourself and the life you want for your children and the legacy you want. I just am so obsessed. I love Morgan Spector, who plays her husband on the show. So hot. Love that relationship so much. Just the way in their marriage they support each other and love each other and are really helping each other in both aspects of their life. Like he's helping her with the society of it all, because that's pretty much what the woman's role was back then. It was making sure the work that the man did made them acceptable, high members of society. And then the man went to work, made the money, and the woman made sure the house was good, the housekeepers, all of that, and even seeing the differences of the housekeeping in the two houses that were in the most, and how their teams interact with each other and their relationships. It's just, oh my God, it's so good. It's so rich. It's history. There's so much. Like, I learned about Mrs. Roebling, the woman built the Brooklyn Bridge, and I did not know that. And I'm a history buff. I love that. And I did not know a woman built that. And they kept it a secret for a long time because they were worried that men would find out that a woman built the bridge and they wouldn't cross it, because they were afraid that the bridge would be default if they knew a woman built it. And just so many cool things, like Thomas Edison and the light bulb and all of them seeing the first building lit up and how they really thought, God's finger touched it and it lit up. Just, it's just so, Julian Fellowes, the creator and writer, just does such a great job with storytelling and world building and the relationships between the people living in the house and the servants. And I love Downton. I love a upstairs, downstairs. It feeds me in all senses of the word. And yeah, it's a great appetizer. I am single hand. I mean, I know I'm not single-handedly, but like, I need y'all to watch it, because I can't, this show can't get canceled. Please. It's just getting started. Please watch it. It's so good. You will not be disappointed. It's truly incredible. The storytelling is just 10 out of 10. So that's my appetizer, The Gilded Age. Oh, so good. And then my main course, my main is Real Housewives of Miami. Oh my God. It is so good. This is another show I need you guys to watch. I don't understand how people are sleeping on Gilded Age and Real Housewives of Miami, because they're two of the best shows on TV, period, right now. Real Housewives of Miami is so incredible because not only are they living these extravagant lives like most housewives do, but they, as adversaries, are so compelling to watch. Like this week, we had drinks being thrown in bitches' faces. We had falling out. We had some behind the scenes of a trip that they had in Milan. Like, oh my gosh. I mean, Lisa and Larsa are great adversaries, A, because they're basically the same person in different font. I mean, honestly, let's be real. And they used to be best friends and they had this falling out, and they just know there's nothing like when a best friend fall out on a Housewives, because they know so much tea. So it's like, we don't want to talk about the husbands, because they know about the husbands. And Larsa and Lisa are very much like that. Like, there's so much history wrapped in this friendship, that seeing them fight, it is just so juicy. And Julia and Gertie are wild. I mean, Julia, I think Julia was overserved and she was doing the most. But I also felt like Gertie, like Kiki said, when someone throws a drink on me, I'm leaving. I'm exiting. I don't want to be involved anymore. But Gertie stayed covered in the drink. I'm just like, babe, you need to know when to fold them, know when to pack it up and go. Because at that point, first of all, I hate being in wet clothes anyway. Like that's ugh. Like that texture just bumps me out. So I would have been ready to go. And the fact that she stayed blew me, truly. And I am very interested to see where this season is gonna go because oh man, it's only 3 episodes in and they are just eating the girls up. They're doing circles, laps around most of these housewives, and they are just the underdogs but I don't know why. They should be top dog, truly. Like Miami is it. So that definitely kept me fed this week. So Miami is my main course. And then my dessert is a little unconventional, but technically they are eating in 28 years later. It's flesh, but they're eating. I saw 28 years later and I loved it. I mean, 28 days later is one of my favorite horror movies. Something about it that was like that in the ring in high school when I was sick. I would always watch those. Those were like my stay at home, like sick movies. Is that weird? Is that crazy? Is that crazy? Is Edna Mode? Is Anna Wintour a little crazy? I don't know. It's something about it that really did it for me. No, but I don't know if it's the Scotland, the island, the coziness. It does something for me. And I love Danny Boyle as a director too. And it picked up just so well. And first, I mean, I got to see my man, Aaron Taylor Johnson, killing it, literally. So fucking hot. They try, he's one of those people. It's like, y'all can try, but like that man is sexy no matter what. It doesn't matter what y'all do, he gonna be fine. And he was another person who's no matter what, they gonna be fine. Jodie Comer. Jodie Comer is in it from Killing Eve. That, yeah, she may be a little crazy, but she a baddie. Like, yeah, you may be a little cuckoo, but who isn't? Who isn't? And yes, there's a lot of zombie, there's a lot of big zombie penises because we're seeing the alphas and the power that they have. And I mean, most of the zombies are nude, so they're just running around. And I wasn't mad. There was someone that was given a Jason Momoa. And if I have to see a zombie penis, I want it to look like that. You know what I mean? Like, if you're gonna, hey, I'll take it. I'll take it. I might even let you get a little flesh. We'll see. Also, Ralph Fiennes, talk about a conclave, okay? What an amazing actor. I mean, he's just, how do you go from Conclave, Harry Potter, 28 years later, The English Patient, The Menu? How does he not have an Oscar? That's what I'm curious about. How does Ralph Fiennes not have an Oscar? See, my American was trying to come out again. Y'all listen to Love Island. I said Lachlan and it's Lachin and it's not Ralph, it's Ralph. Ralph Fiennes is amazing. And so is 28 Years Later. I really enjoyed it. We got a little appearance from my boy Jack O'Connell. I said, Jack doing Sinners and 28 Years Later, my boy. Anyone in Skins, I'm always rooting for. Skins UK, I'm supporting my people, okay? You best believe I'm gonna be at a Adedeye Kalua, Dev Patel, Nicholas Hoult, any of them. I'm supporting my Skins fam. So that was really cool to see him, and I like the ending. It's a little We might be getting, okay, we're at 28 years later. Could it be 28 lifetimes later? Like, what's next? 28 years later, like 28 more years later? I don't know. I'm not doing all that. We'll see, but I really had such a good time. And I did a double feature and honorable mention to Materialist, which I really enjoyed. I thought that was very cute. It's the most I've ever liked Dakota Johnson, truthfully. I like her so much more outside of her acting. To me, her acting is very, very monotone, very like one note. But this had a little more dimension. I don't know. I don't know if it was Pedro and the Chris Evans, like being surrounded by hot dudes, but I liked her character and I just like the story. I mean, Celine Song is a great storyteller too. So as a director and writer, I really, really liked that. It was funny because we saw 28 years later first and then Materialist. And the way the movie starts, we literally thought we were in the wrong movie. We were like, is this like a 28 year later? Like, do we miss something? Like, what? So when you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about with that beginning. But I enjoyed it. Pedro's so hot. Oh my God. He's just like so good. And I'm just like, man, you guys, the gays, it's just not fair. Because I'm like, y'all got Pedro, allegedly. I mean, we know. The dolls know what's up. You got Pedro, you got Matt Bomer, you got Jonathan Bailey. Man. I'm just like always pining for a gay man. And I have been since I was in high school, middle school. So nothing ever changes with me. Okay. But yes, Chris Evans was great too. It was really cute. So honorable mention to Materialist because I enjoyed it a lot. Like I said, the most I've liked Dakota. And that's my little meal. Oh my God. I'm stuffed. And I'm sure you guys are stuffed after this episode because that's a lot of information to take in. But I hope you took it in and I hope you have a little joy. I hope this brought you some joy and you have a good weekend and rest of your week. And thank you guys so much for listening and supporting. It really means a lot to have y'all in here with me. Like, it's such a fun ride. And I would do this for myself regardless, because if you know me, you know that this is just a part of my DNA. But the fact that I have dishers and people who want to listen and talk about all this stuff is really so joyful. And I hope that as much as I pour in, that you guys get that back. And I know you pour into me too. And I'm just so grateful to have such a cute, great little community of dishers. So, thank you guys for listening to another episode. The Dish with Tish will be back next week for some Love Island and our normal helping of the dish. Make sure you like, subscribe. Please hit us with 5 stars. And I'll see you guys very soon. I love you. Bye.